The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2019. On the podcast today, I have David Sefton, Executive Chairman at Anglo African Oil and Gas. AAOG is the ticker there. And David provides an update on their progress at their tilapia license in the Republic of Congo. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, a mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about climate change, China's growth, and the following companies: Serabi Gold, Caledonia Mining, Strategic Minerals, and Atalaya Mining. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following stocks: Bidstack, Brave Bison, RA International, and Cadogan Petroleum. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists, exciting, eh? At voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a whole bunch of other content from SP Angel, actually, from Malky. There's a content piece there on Block Energy. The shares are soaring following the Rustavi well update. Also, taking stock with Zach Meir today. Plus, there's other stuff there. There's lots of Powerhouse Energy, signs first revenue contract. There's lots of other stuff. So check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Sefton, Executive Chairman of Anglo African Oil and Gas. AAOG is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, well, listen, the last time you had news out was the 29th of March, almost half a month away, and I know you're busy behind the scenes, lots going on, and we'll cover that bit of news off, and we'll discuss what's happening, what you're doing behind the scenes, and what's expected. But as always, David, if someone's tuning in for the first time or not familiar with the company, can you just summarise what Anglo African Oil and Gas is all about, please?
Sure. I mean, we're a small E&P company with one asset at the moment, which is the tilapia field in the Republic of the Congo. This is an existing producing asset where, on top of development opportunities with the existing proven reserves to increase production, also have some massively high impact exploration targets in layers such as the Jenu. We last year drilled a well. We actually found more oil than we were expecting in every single target layer, including, fantastically, we found oil in the Jenu itself.
And
we're now looking to how we maximise that going forward and massively scale up production from tilapia.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go into that update. You mentioned that the 103C well, you did analysis, and there's of oil at surface. Take us through that, if you could, David.
Yeah, well, this wasn't exactly expected, because Schlumberger had plugged the 103C well below the Mengo. The production plan has been to, or was to, produce from R2 and the Mengo commingled. I would say for Schlumberger's plugging that oil found its, from the Jenu, found its way through a 25-foot concrete plug. I mean, I guess it says a number of things. One thing it does say is that the computations about the amount of oil we found in the Jenu look at the very least to be correct. And also that the pressure there must be very, very, very considerable. The surprising bit from our point of view is the reason we were not expecting to produce from the Jenu in 103C is we thought, because we'd had to use so much mud to stabilise the well during drilling down in that layer, that the area surrounding the well bore would have been damaged to an extent that production would be difficult from in the immediate area. Now that obviously doesn't look to be the case, and it was also very good to get the oil tested, so it's the 36 API, extremely high quality crude, and put to bed any questions whatsoever about the validity of the discovery. So overall, it's good news. Obviously, as we'll chat about and get a bit later, prompting a bit of thinking about what our production plan is.
Yeah. And also in that RNS, you mentioned about the repayments of funds from the SNPC. How's that going?
Yeah, that's going very well. We got the second payment in about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing about that is that, in one sense, those now stands about $9-ish million. We can't keep carrying them forever. So, we put forward a proposal originally, which was that we'll exchange that debt for massive increase in our equity in the field from 56% to 85%. And fundamentally, that's kind of where the value is. You can put it this way, you couldn't buy 30% of this field now on the open market for $10 million, that's for sure. Yeah. But we also, in the rights of production, cash flow is king, and getting some cash repayment now is massively, massively valuable. Extremely pleasingly, SNPC have come back and given us what to me is sort of the perfect response, which is they will keep paying us cash back now on a monthly basis, and it's quite a significant amount to pay back. At the same time, we'll adjust the equity going forward in a few months' time once we get that negotiation concluded. I suspect we'll probably end up in roughly the same place on equity as we would have ended up if we traded earlier, but with some extra cash in the bank.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the perfect scenario of cash now when we need it, equity later on when we want it.
Yeah. Okay. In the RNS, you do say, throwing forward, you've got CPR should be updated, published the next few weeks. Is that progressing well?
It is progressing well. It has taken a bit more time, not least because, sometimes these things always do, but also, much more importantly here, with the oil coming to surface, that's provided some very, very critical data, which LRS Energy are looking at, and so the whole Geno analysis is being revamped on the back of that. Obviously, pushing them to work as hard as they sensibly can, while at the same time want to make sure it's a good piece of work. So I don't have an exact date for it coming out. It is, there are some drafts that are going around. It is being worked on very, very hard. But obviously we're hopeful with particularly the new data that will have some interesting conclusions in it.
Yeah. And I suppose one other thing is, how is progress on the licence going?
Yeah, that's going very well. One of the guys was a meeting with an SNPC technical conference a week or so ago, and on all the documents distributed, the license was shown as having been already re-awarded to us. And the documents have been prepared for the Conseil de Ministre. We still have not seen the formal terms yet. There's a little bit of Africa time in terms of the DJs getting us that document. I'm sure whatever comes through will be utterly horrendous, but we're expected to have a negotiation anyway. We've very much indicated to the government that they need to get on with that, because we need to get on with our development plan for the field. And they have promised us the first cut of the commercial terms on the new licence as soon as possible. We are chasing them on a certainly weekly, if not sort of daily basis, about them.
Yeah, okay. And so as far as you're concerned, David, pretty much everything's going to plan there, is it?
Oh, yeah. I think the conversation will be very good. Other than getting us the detailed economics of which is sort of cost or profit or split, etc., the reward, all the documents we'd expect to see getting into place, all the attributions, they're all done, the sort of the internal government audit on this is done. In this question, we have to see this, obviously, it's still going to be in the context of that, but normally, I think Congolese law says you can only do a reaward within the last 6 months of an existing licence. Now, obviously, we're not in the last 6 months, so we're slightly outside of their normal process, but, they have accepted that, and they're happy with doing it that way, and they understand that we won't move forward without the new licence in place. We're very happy, very good relations with the government, with SNPC. They're obviously very pleased to have a very active small Anglophone operator in there who is and wants to spend money and has delivered a very successful well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, one final thing, or three, I should say, final things, David. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think we are, first of all, that kind of rare beast of a small EMP company, which has, you know, over-delivered on the results from a well. No criticism of anybody else. It's a tricky business, this, and there's a lot of luck involved, but this one has sort of really come off big time. But also, you know, underlying that has always been our strategy, which is to mix existing production with a disciplined approach to cash flows with exploration upside. We don't have that zero sum, lose everything if a well goes wrong elements of a lot of other small E&P companies. And we quite deliberately have something which, while remaining, keeping the exciting upside of the exploration, also is a focus on actually selling oil. Thirdly, that, you know, coming out of all this, it's been a quiet period for R&S. It's not exactly been a quiet period within AEG, but coming out of this, there's obviously a lot of very exciting news and interesting news as we bring 103C into production, new license, CPR, the SNPC percentage settlement, looking at the overall plan for 6 to 8 wells for tilapia as a whole. So there's going to be a lot of work going place, a lot of news coming out, and it's just going to be a really exciting time to taking an asset that we've always thought was just a fantastic potential and making it something that it is. And if I can be cheeky and add a fourth one to this one, yeah. I don't think any of this is reflected in the price.
Yeah. Well, no, looking at the chart just then, it had that initial sort of boost, you know, from the successful sort of results and findings, and then it's come back. I mean, that's sort of the chart. It went up to sort of touch 18 pence, but now it's back at 11 pence. So it's, you know, yeah, it has consolidated, which is, you know, as from an investor.
That's right. It's been kind of drifting up over the last kind of couple of months. And so, Charles, we haven't exactly been out there promoting the stock. But I think it's, you know, we still have decent trading volume. And I think people are, it's interesting, so quite a lot of sort of interesting sort of institutions and individuals being in contact with you, sort of starting to build positions in the stock and starting to take an interest in it. I guess, yeah, in some sense, it's becoming a more kind of mature oil company now.
Yeah, absolutely. David, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, you're telling me you've been sort of visiting the old climate change people, having a party with them, have you?
Yes, I popped up yesterday to see how they were getting on with their climate change camp at Oxford Circus. Mm-hmm. The great thing is they'd managed to do what the Lord Mayor of London hasn't been able to do for the last 10 years, and actually closed Oxford Street to traffic.
Nice.
So no buses going down there. The air was clean, and they were having a bit of a party. Good DJ, but a very disappointing speech from one of the organisers on climate change. No facts, no figures, just rhetoric, and the rhetoric wasn't even particularly powerful either. So
yeah.
I felt a little bit let down by it. I thought there was going to be a bit more oomph in what they were saying, and sadly it wasn't.
Well, do you know, I'm all for looking at whether we are, if climate change is happening. I'm quite into that kind of stuff. But I saw the shots on TV of some of these people, and I thought, yeah, I'm not on their side. I just thought they could do with a good washcloth. So I know, you know, saving water is part of the climate thing, but and a lot of them just dancing around, a bit fake, really. I just thought they're trying to enjoy themselves. But there's still this big question up in the air. But I do believe climate change is happening. I mean, you know, it's just a population explosion that's happened. You know, phenomena has never happened before. The amount of CO2 we're pumping into the atmosphere, I do believe is happening. You know, and but I'm quite encouraged that the big economies are trying to tackle it. Even the China, like, you know, is a major polluter. They are trying to tackle it head on now. They're doing something about it. Unlike Trump, which is a bit backward. As they're saying now, America may go backwards, you know, as far as renewables are concerned and investing in sustainable, you know, energy, because of Trump. You know, it's a backward policy towards coal and stuff. You know.
Yes, well, I mean, America has gone backwards slightly, but I think the fact is technology is going to overtake the policymakers here and everybody's going to get greener, just really because power costs continue to go up. So we're all trying to become more energy efficient naturally. Electric vehicles are coming in anyway, so there is policy advance going on there. So I'm quite optimistic. I mean, we do see the impact of climate change in the fact that you can now drive bulk carriers through the Northwest Passage around the top of Canada, and that virtually halves the shipping time from Canada or Greenland over to China, which is a major advance for
You couldn't do this before.
The first big ship to go through was 2013. The Chinese are throwing quite a lot at opening that sea route, and the fact is, once you've run one ship through, it's very much easier for everyone else to.
So explain this, John. This is about ice depletion. What's happening? Why?
Yeah, this is ice depletion. So the sea ice that grows over from the Arctic to northern Canada. Is now breaking up in the summer and creating a proper open sea channel. So what the companies do is you use an ice class bulk carrier and then you run it through just behind an ice class tugboat. Yeah. And it's quite, I mean, an ice class bulk carrier doesn't really cost any more than your average bulk carrier. It's got a slightly bigger engine, it has a slightly different propeller. And it's got a bit more steel in its hull, and that's it. It's a fairly simple thing. Mm-hmm. And for a company like Blue Jay Mining, for example, they will easily be able to run bulk carriers across the Northwest Passage and down to the major Chinese consumers on the Chinese East Coast.
Yeah, well, talking about Chinese consumers, you must have been quite happy today because Chinese economy grew at 6.4% apparently for Q1, so it's rebounded. Analysts thought it was going to be 6.3%, so you must be quite happy with that.
Yeah, this is a good result, and this comes around from increased construction activity, which we saw in Q4 in China, and that looks like it's been continuing, and quite a substantial increase in credit growth. So the Chinese have taken the foot off the brake with regard to credit in China, and that's causing everything to open up and get going again. And some of that was to offset the impact of tariffs. Set by Donald Trump, and now we see that policymakers are making positive news or positive noises on the tariff discussions. So we're expecting that maybe by June or July, we should get agreement on that.
Do you know what? There's two things here that I quite sticks out to me. I noticed that Chinese banks, right? So they've reduced, haven't they? They've stimulus has happened in China, the tax cuts, infrastructure spending. Chinese banks have lent a record 5.8 trillion yuan, right, in Q1. That is more than the GDP of Switzerland.
Yeah,
That's in Q1. That's phenomenal, isn't it?
These are very big numbers, and it goes to show that China is so much bigger than it was 10 years ago. Mm. And even then, it was so much bigger than it was, you know, against the previous decade. So China has really grown so fast over the years and is set to overtake the United States if the US doesn't actually get a move on.
Yeah, that's I mean, just Chinese banks, just they're lending in Q1 £663 billion. It's more than Switzerland's GDP for a year. It's phenomenal. Just the banks in Q1. That just shows how big China is. But you know what I'm worried about here? So Japan also came up with figures, right, saying that their exports are weak. And they cite weak China demand. Now, people always question Chinese official figures, don't they? They say it's not accurate. They're more political than actually accurate there. And so Chinese reckon they're going well, but Japan's suffering. So who do we sort of believe here?
Well, remember that the Chinese don't need to buy so many Japanese cars these days because they're producing so much more at home. Mm-hmm. So not only has China persuaded Japanese manufacturers to produce more in China, but they've also, now that they're making so much more themselves with their domestic producers, they don't need to import so much. So I see this as just a natural development in the way China has been moving manufacturing onshore China.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on to any news of any significance from companies this week, John? Or?
Well, there's been a lot of news, lots of busy news coming up from various companies. Tarabi Gold, their Q1 production was on track, which was nice to see. Mm-hmm. So lots of companies saying that things are going relatively well. Caledonia Mining doing okay with their shaft. Central shaft update.
Rock and roll.
What else? Yeah, well, exactly. So there's lots of that stuff going on, but not a lot that's so meaningful. Strategic Minerals, they started copper production, but it's just a little bit of test production at their Lee Creek project in Australia. So things are going nicely there. So lots of warm, fuzzy, positive news, but nothing that exciting in the last week.
Yeah. No, I had Peter, one of the directors on, Peter Whale, director of Strategic this week, and like you said, that's, you know, project there, and there was a little bit of cynicism, or, you know, scepticism, I should say, over that project, how cheap they got it. But now it's turning into be, you know, it will be their significant revenue generator, and everyone, he says, he feels that everyone at the moment is focused on Cobre too much. That's pretty much the past. The future is Lee Creek. And he said people should be looking forward now rather than looking back, you know.
I couldn't agree more. I think Lee Creek is going to be an important revenue generator for them, and that's really good news from a shareholder perspective. I think also worth mentioning Atalaya Mining, good performance there at their Rio Tinto project in Spain. They're doing well, good management team on that one, and nice to see that's still working. And
what's,
I think,
the ticker
there,
John?
That's ATYM.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I think at some point, you know, they need to do some more exploration in the region, but at some point they've got to find something with some higher grade and sort of to give the business a better and longer term future. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, maybe there ought to be a wild card to come out of that at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Anything else? Or was that it for this week?
I think that does it for now.
I think
I'm sure there's more to come.
Yeah, I think some companies just, winding down for an Easter. You know, the thing is, you have to put news out if it's significant, but Easter, you know, we've got 4 days now where the market isn't open pretty much, and so it's a long time, isn't it? You're better off going the other side of Easter, I think, the Easter break. So I think hopefully news will pick up, you know, after the Easter break, I think.
Well, it's true, and it's nice, you know, iron ore prices are still moving higher because of the cyclone disruption on Western Australia, and of course the ongoing impact of the tailings dam disaster at Vale. And actually, interesting, we saw a letter this morning from the church commissioners and a whole bunch of other investors asking mining companies to a series of questions on their tailings dams. And they've sent this out to some 600, 700 mining companies to say, look, you know, exactly what are your tailings dams looking like, and have you double checked everything? So very good to see that sort of investor action, asking the right sorts of questions and pushing for meaningful change.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you. Have a nice Easter, and we'll catch up in the following week. All right?
Look forward to it. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all right, Al?
I'm very well, very perky, just in the run-up to Easter. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. You know, I had three stocks yesterday, really, really well. I mean, every now and again I have this. There were three stocks with double-digit percentage gains, and that was it Sabian Technology, Bidstack, and Xerox Technology, you know? And I cover them in a couple of videos. But
Bidstack, the stock that keeps on giving. It's just incredible, that story, isn't it? I think there was an announcement yesterday. Somebody else has joined the advisory committee.
Oh, yes. I know all about that, Al. Yes. This guy's phenomenal signing. I mean, this is the third now advisory committee member. And I just thought, you know, the first one was from Spotify. Second was from Trade Desk. You know, Trade Desk is one of the biggest, fastest growing demand side platforms, programmatic advertising platforms in the world, pretty much. This market cap went up by 2 billion in a week. I covered them 1 week. Looked back at them. Went up by 2 billion from 6.7 to 8.7. So one goes from that. And once something bids, like, at the inventory on that platform, I think it'll go nuts to sales. But also Spotify. And then yesterday they announced Will Kasoy, I think his name is. But I've seen him on LinkedIn because him and James have complimented each other over previous hirings. And of course, we've got Mike Hayes, is now non-executive director. He's done Sega, head of Europe and America Sega. He's also in Nintendo, also with Codemasters, with BAFTA award-winning game thing. And also, he is investment director at Mercia Technologies. And this company just exists to invest in British-based innovative tech startups. So they, okay, well, there's no need to go to the market, really, to brokers to get a fundraise. If they need a fundraise, pitch that. They've got Mike there, well connected in the gaming area, and also well connected as far, and that company invested like 9.2 million in the last 6 months, in tech companies in Britain. So, they've got their funds. If they need funds, it's sorted with Mike and also contacts. But Will is a phenomenal story. He's with Activision Blizzard, who bought like Candy Crush.
Activision Blizzard, that's it,
They bought Candy Crush for like 5.9 billion. And in fact, Maritz Natalini, who's also now working for BidStack, was from Candy Crush and Activision Blizzard. But he was CEO, Will was CEO of Ad Colony, a video advertising platform reaching over 1 billion consumers globally. It was bought by 350, it went from nothing, pre-revenue, to being bought out within, I think, 4 years, of $350 million. And it was recognized on the Inc.'s 500 list of fastest growing private companies in America. And they're signing up, a stellar, people aboard and just advisory committee around them, people with excellent connections. And I just think these people are going to help them get in the right space. They're in the right space anyway, but help them connect to, the big, fast-growing platforms. I just think BidStack is the perfect storm as far as potential.
Well, I think the thing is, the shares have gone from sort of 4 or 5p to 19.5p, and still there's a sense that we're just sitting right at the start of the journey. It's quite incredible. I mean, you get these 10 baggers coming along fairly infrequently. You get 100 bagger, which potentially it could be. Who knows? Shares go down as well as up. We know that. But
I love tech, right?
And I say everything is in place. I think this company could well, given the people that it's attracted at this stage of the game. These guys are big hitters. Multi-billion-pound organizations that they come from, and they're on the advisory board. Clearly, massively interested in what BidStack are doing.
And I can't see why people don't see this. And people say it's been overvalued now. I think, do you know what? Listen, I'm not comparing them to the biggest companies in the world, but as an example, everyone I know, right, called Netflix, Uber, Amazon, all the big performers in the last, Facebook, all those companies have always been described as overvalued. This side of the shore, the big movers here, Boohoo, ASOS, they've all been called overvalued by traditional people who value companies in a traditional way and only look at revenue and P's of 10 to 15 or 20. If you want the big winners in life, you've got to go for the companies that are overvalued because they're growing very quick. And, that's the way
they
are.
They're going that way for a reason. They're right at the cutting edge, and indeed the first company I'm going to talk about today is very much of that ilk too, and that's of course Brave Bison, BBSN.
Let me just say one thing about more BidStack. It's the perfect storm of hope, high potential. It's in the right place, right time. Every year, pretty much, you get a tech 10 bagger come along. I've been fortunate to have two of them. EVRH start, I had that 10 bagged. I had Vasarian 10 bagged. And in the tech space, pretty much every year, you get come along, a potential 10 bagger comes along. The difference between BidStack and VRS and EVRH is the end market bids is in is massive. And now the other two, they're not. The markets yet are undefined. We don't know the potential of graphene, and as yet it's still, there's a technical issue of producing quality at quantity to get the revenue generated. And also music VR hasn't really proved itself at all. But yet we know BidStack in gaming is $180 billion business. It's massive.
I think you've just got to look at the dynamics of gaming and the sort of people that play games now. My son and his friends, late 20s, early 30s, and they're all involved in gaming heavily still because they grew up with it.
Go on.
When you think it can't evolve, it suddenly does, and the scope and the market for gaming is just enormous. It's the biggest growth market I think that we're going to see for the next 5-10 years. It's quite something.
You hit the nail on the head there. People think they don't look at the future, and the thing is, it will evolve. You imagine now when you don't have to invest in a console game, right? A console box like an Xbox, because Google, this is what Google are doing. Other people will follow, and you're streaming it all. like Spotify done to music. You know, I mean, Apple didn't see it coming, the streaming, and Spotify did it. And now it's going to happen with gaming. And do you know what? How are these companies going to pay for free games? By advertising. Yep. You know, that's how it'll happen. And then it'll be subscription. If you have less adverts with subscription. And BidStack's model will play into any of those scenarios. Anyway, go on. You're talking about, was it Brave Bison you said?
Brave Bison, BBSN. We've spoken about Brave Bison before. Just a quick part of summary of what the company does. So the company provides social video, and it markets and disseminates social video across channels. It's the biggest provider and generates more page views on Facebook than any other provider to Facebook. Engages with users in the 16 to 34 age group. Its clients include Shell, Slash Football, Rebel FC, and many others. It's currently the world's second biggest digital publisher. Recently signed distribution deals with Tencent in China and Una in Indonesia. Indeed, the results that were announced on March 27th showed incredible growth as promised by the company. Revenue growth of 19% to 21 million. The loss before tax of 17 million last year was reduced to just 100,000. And EBITDA turned from a negative 100,000 to 80,000 this year. The company is surging ahead. It's got 5 million cash in the bank. It's got no borrowing. And this is... It's a digital company that's got its own war chest, which is really quite something. But the shares took a tumble lately because the CEO, who had been very much at the forefront of driving the business, Claire Hungate, she was seen across video podcasts, doing an excellent job of turning the company from an innovation concept into a big revenue generator. Now, she suddenly left the company. It's still not exactly clear why. But
Listen, Al. I was in BidStack, and Brave Bison for a while, and I did quite well. Yep. I doubled my money on it. And when the finals came out, which we knew anyway what was happening there, and like I said, on an EBITDA level, they were cash generative. They had 5 million of cash, or in excess of 5 million. And there was big volume on the day. You expected a bit of volume on the day, but it was extraordinary volume on the day of the finals. And I thought, I tweeted someone who also holds, and there's something going on here. I'm sure TR1 will be coming out on a seller or something. We know there wasn't a seller in there. But then the next day, the CFO announced he'd sold more than half his holding. And I thought, well, hang on a sec. So I just sold. I dumped my lot. I thought, if a CFO of a company sells out, that I don't care what it's for, that's bad. Right after financial results, like I said, they had 9 consecutive years of EBITDA loss, and now this year they've come. So I contacted Claire, and Claire then resigned the day after. So the share price halved from 3.6 pence to 1.8, pretty much where it's at now. And so I contacted Claire because everything looked good with the company. Why did she leave? I don't understand. Claire did come back to me, and there we are. Breaking news here. And so what did Claire say? I asked if investors should be worried, and she says, my exit doesn't have anything to do with the health of the business.
No.
So I thought, do you know what? I've gone back in. I've jumped back into Brave Bison. I thought, the momentum's been knocked a little bit. It'll pick back up, because at the end of the day, the fundamentals will shine through. And like the new lady, Kate, I mean, she's excellent track record. Have you read about Kate?
Yeah, I have. She's got a phenomenal track record. In fact, I hooked up with her on LinkedIn. I mean, she's got a distinguished background.
I'll get it now. Kate Burns. I'll read it out for you.
Trying to load this page. Here.
Yeah, she's currently venture partner at Hamro Perks, which is investment.
Hamro Perks, an investment
company. So they've got access to funds they need it, but don't need to do it anyway. But Kate also held a range of roles at Google during her 6 years at the company. She was the first employee outside the United States, rising to regional director of UK, Ireland, Benelux. So she was big in Google. Before joining Hamro Perks, Kate was CEO of AOL Europe, following which she joined BuzzFeed as European General Manager. So she knows her stuff. She's a sharp cookie. And I think,
she's already on the circuit too. She does a lot of, she's a key speaker at tech conferences too. So she's well known within the tech industry and has a very high profile as a result of that. And she's also a keen horsewoman too. And she's involved in show jumping and all the rest of it. So,
Wow, that's more detail than needed, Al. But do you know what? And she'll jump over a couple of hurdles here, I suspect. But do you know what?
Well, she will.
I think now we've had this fallout. I just think she'll be chomping. Here we go, Al. Chomping at the bit. Well, she'll be chomping at the bit to release some. So to release some good news here, to show that she's carrying on the good news. So I'm just thinking the momentum's been knocked out of the stock, but it'll come back, and she'll be the lady to restore that momentum. I think, you know. So I'm back in BBSN. I think it's a decent company, you know.
I think so too. Hang on,
10 million market cap. They got 5 million in cash. It's like,
exactly. 10 million market cap, 5 million cash, a dynamic new chief executive that's also a professional show jumper as well. I mean, this is really quite something. You know, we've got a very competitive lady at the helm who's well-known on the tech circuit. So in many ways, she ticks many more boxes than Claire Hungate did. Claire did a great job. So anyway, you know, Kate's got to get her feet under the table, and she's got to get engaged with the business. But she came in last year into the company, onto the board, so she's well versed with what Brave Bison's about, and obviously the dynamic growth the company's seen since then. But I think at this level, I mean, we're back down to sort of levels from the middle of last year. I think at this level, it offers an excellent opportunity, particularly as you say, 5 million cash in the bank, 10 million market cap. EBITDA positive growth. What's not to like? You know, this has got serious potential.
Yeah, I mean, a while back I moved away from resource stocks, so I think global growth was in question, and of course they're highly leveraged, and I was looking for tech companies that are cash generative, didn't need to go back to the market because there was a hard market, and Brave Bison was one of the ones I came across. They're obviously going from being a loss maker to cash generative, and yeah, I did very well, and then all of a sudden CFO messed up and then Claire left, and so it just completely, you know, the stomach punch, wind knocked the wind out of the sails, but hopefully that'll come back. Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, spoken about this company several times already. This is a company called RA International. RAI is the epicode. Now, the company provides resources and logistical support to humanitarian mining and the oil and gas industries in remote locations. So there's a very much an ethical dimension to this company, provides logistical support for a lot of the humanitarian aid efforts. And that's particularly relevant because the CEO, Sarah Narfeld, and her husband, Lars, both formerly worked for the UN and saw an opportunity here. And indeed, Joanne Hart at the Mail on Sunday tipped this company at 69.5p shortly after it floated in 2018. And of course, shares are currently trading now at 41p. So since the company floated, it's won a number of major contract wins with publicly listed US and UK companies. It also has US government approval, which of course is critical for both tendering for and winning the contracts. But there was an issue in the run-up to the recent results, which were announced last week, in that the results basically missed expectations due to project delays. And the reason for that is that these are huge contracts. It's a protracted negotiation process, and often when these contracts are put into place, it takes a lot longer to get them over the line than it might otherwise do. So indeed, this was an issue in the run-up to the results. But nonetheless, on the 10th of April, the company announced revenues were up 10% to 54.8 million, underlying profit up 6% to 13.5 million. The net cash position of the company improved massively. From $5.6 million last year, $27 million now in the bank. And the company, on the back of that, paid out a full year maiden dividend of a penny, which equates to roughly a 2.4% yield. Along with the announcements, and in fact, prior to the announcements, the company announced that it had expanded its operations in Mozambique with a land purchase, and had also acquired 50% of a company called Royal Food Solutions that are a food distribution agency in Mozambique. It also signed a further service agreement worth $8.5 million with IAP World Services. So great momentum within the company. And indeed, Sarah Narfeld said with the results that several large bids in the pipeline are transformational in nature for the company. So if we look at the share price performance since the float, they were tipped by Joe, tipped by the Mail on Sunday at 69.5p, seeing a year high of 87p and come back to 36p, now trading up slightly this morning, now trading 41.5p. So really, I think... With the market cap at this level of 72 million and the size of the contract that the company is negotiating, there's great potential for ongoing growth from here. And it would just take one of those open quotation marks, transformational close quotation marks contracts to come in, and we could be back up to those year highs again. Clearly, there's a risk with this, but given that Lars and I felt are both ex-UN, they're clearly working very closely with the UN and their contacts there. I think this is a great company, and also there's an ethical dimension to add to your portfolio.
Marvellous stuff. RAI is ticker there. Do you hold any stock there?
I'm looking at buying some. I'm chopping out some funds that I've been holding now that have had a good run, and this is one of the stocks on my shortlist. I'm just kind of looking to do something probably over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
So the answer is no, then, yeah.
not right at this second, but it's on my watch list, along with Bidstack and along with BBSN as well. So yeah,
okay. But the answer is no. Yeah,
yeah. The answer is no right now. Yeah.
Cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, spoken about this company before, Cadogan Petroleum, CAD is the epic code, market cap of 23 million. We spoke about this before in February. Market cap was 19.6 million, 8.5p. It's now trading at 10p. Now, Cadogan have a number of operations. The primary one is the Monasterysca oil and gas project in western Ukraine, which is set to produce 274 barrels of oil per day. The company's key well, the Blaz 10 well, the company announced last week that it had struck an oil bearing level of strata, and also whilst the cost of drilling the Blast 10 well had gone over budget by about 10%. It also drilled using modern drilling techniques. It had drilled and completed its test on that well in about a third to a quarter of the time normally taken by companies drilling sort of in that area. So they've got the results back very quickly. The chief executive, Guido Michelotti, is very bullish about the company going forward, as he should be, given that this is a company with something like $40 million of cash in the bank, no debt whatsoever. It also received a chunking great payment from Eni, the ENI, the Italian oil company, in January after exiting the shale gas project that was operated by ENI and Cadogan. The company also has other interests in the Po Valley in Italy. There's a company called Explo Energy that the company holds a 90% stake in. The company also trades gas. It imports gas from Poland and Slovakia into the Ukraine. You know, which normally you hear about these sort of commodity imports or gas imports being the other way around, but in this case they're actually trading and importing from Poland and Slovakia into the Ukraine, and they have a wholly owned subsidiary called Astor Service, which provides as a mini Petrofac. It supplies a full range of oil and gas services to its to the company operating the Blaz 10 well in Ukraine. So in short, the Blaz 10 well is looking extremely positive. Looks set to produce oil at or in ahead of the levels that it has have already been indicated. It's got cash in the bank. It's got no debt. It's also got a very strong institutional backing as well, with just a 20% free float. So the shares are creeping up gradually. There was a big spike after the announcement last week. Shares have come back a bit. So you might want to wait a bit if it comes back to the level it was in February, which it may not do now. But you might want to wait a bit before you get in. But even so, I think this is when you've got a company with this amount of cash in the bank, an oil exploration company, it looks a pretty good bet to me.
Yeah, I'm going to wait a while. In fact, I'm going to wait a long time. I'm not. Do you know what? I don't know what it is. I just resource oil and gas stocks now. I'm turned off by them.
Well, I think you're having a lot of success with the tech stocks. Just so your focus is there right now, and clearly that's where you should be. But obviously, it's my job to provide as wide a spread of suggestions as possible for listeners. So you've got three completely different companies there to choose from.
Exactly. Do research on? Do research
variety,
on
variety is the spice of life.
It certainly is. Marvellous. And do you know what? I didn't know that Kate Burns was a keen horse rider. And that's
she is. Yeah.
That's a lot of info there. See, if we get down to the personal life of CEOs in this podcast, not just the relevant stuff, but the stuff. I love that. I don't know where. I suppose you did try your best to make it relevant by saying she's obviously a very competitive lady. I love that.
Well, that's right. Yes,
I love that.
But equally, it could have Bray Bison shareholders stampeding for joy or jumping for joy.
She's also an Aquarius, has blue eyes, and likes the colour pink.
Well, there you go. Does it say that on LinkedIn?
Thanks for that, as always, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
That's just catch up after Easter. Have a good Easter.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Bold Opportunities was Photon Star, of course, PSL, RTO here, it's now BOU. It's fallen 17% today. At four, it's Coro Energy, up 11.5%, CORO. At three, Block Energy, BLOE, up 32.5%. At two, Integumin, Skin is a ticker there. And they've changed direction. I've had a lot of people contact me about Skin, and so I did read up on it. As yet, I haven't got the story into my head. It takes me a while to understand it. But I quite like there's a tech element to it, AI, sort of tech element. So I'll be looking into that. I don't know much about it yet. I don't hold any stock. But it's in tech. I love tech. That's tech in me. I like tech. Can't help. I just love tech, man. Okay. At one, Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG, down 2.5% today. Of course, I chat to David on the podcast today. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Block Energy. The fact it's only at five says to me not many people still know about it. I mean, check the share price. I just rallied strongly. BLOE ticker there. At four, Powerhouse Energy Group. First revenue contract for Powerhouse Energy. Do you know what? It's not a massive amount. It's 400,000. But that's not the point. This is cutting-edge tech. This is taking waste that nobody wants. In fact, people charge you. If you're a commercial enterprise, people charge you to take this waste away or do something with it. So it's waste that no one wants, has negative value, and they change it into energy, clean energy that everyone wants. Ladies and gentlemen, I've said it before, it's alchemy nearly. If they can get this running, and this suggests it's going to be up and running, this commercial side of it, then it could be massive, It's a solution. It's one of the solutions. It's a small solution, but one of the solutions to the problem we have in this world. Plastic pollution and creating too much waste. At three, Hurricane Energy, Warwick Deep 205/26B/well/spud. Okay. At three, Infrastrata, half year report. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Sound Energy and its Schlumberger direct license position. But it's down at 3.4% today. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.